Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and open Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's hear it for the man, the myth, the legend, super producer, Max Entertainment Williams.
What? Yeah, everyone, if you were wondering what the E stands for, because we've all, in the Ridiculous History lore, we're always going on about Max's mysterious E middle name, because that's definitely a thing, right, Max?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely not J. Definitely not J.
I don't know what you're talking about. E equals entertainment because Max is nothing if not entertaining. Today's topic, I think, is something we've all been looking forward to. In addition to our research associate, the amazing Dr. Z, Dr. Zach, Dr. Zed, if you're Canadian. I think it hits a little different for me and Ben. Max, I think you probably grew up going to some iteration of the Chuck E. Cheese franchise, you know, scenario when you were a kid. But Ben and I are of a certain age. Pretty sure we went to the OG, or at least what we thought was the OG until we researched the story, Showbiz Pizza, featuring the terrifying performances of the animatronic Rock-A-Fire Explosion band.
Yeah, it's AKA every child's first introduction to a casino, because the idea is, like, if you're a kid, this is a miraculous thing, right? You get to show up, they have pizza, which is still very, very hot in many demographics, including podcasters. Mm-hmm. And Noel, then you get all the games, and the entire time, there's this magical animatronic band. And if you're young enough, I think it looks like they're actually playing. That's a question for you. When you saw those bands as a wee tyke, were you old enough to realize they were kind of just sort of pretending to play?
I don't remember, honestly. Like, it does feel sort of the way as an idiot child, you might interpret like someone in a suit, you know, like wearing like a mouse suit or like, you know, at Disney or whatever. The movements, mega uncanny valley. Looking at them now, it pretty much nightmare fuel. But I remember as a kid being really charmed by them and really feeling like they did have like life within them. And that's a testament to the creators and then the whole thinking behind these types of experiences. It really did all start, you know, in a way, I think, with Disney and the Imagineers. I just was lucky enough to go to Disney World in Florida with my family. And I think my favorite part were some of the older rides that incorporated that early kind of Imagineer animatronic stuff, like the Country Bears Jamboree, which I would argue, I don't know the timeline exactly, but pretty sure that this whole Chuck E. Cheese Rockafire explosion animatronic band, an utter ripoff of the Country Bears Jamboree, because that is a stage situation with guests that pop in and you're in a little theater and there's, you know, posters on the wall as if the stars of the show are actual real life, you know, celebrities and stuff. Pretty sure that's where it came from.
I could see that too. And, you know, when I was abroad most recently in Japan, there are a ton of venues and restaurants that have stuff like this going on. It's just really, really cool. And today we're going to talk about what our pal Dr. Z calls the many lives of Charles Entertainment Cheese. I'm with you on the timeline because it might be surprising for a lot of us to know that this story dates back to the 1970s. In May of 1977, San Jose, California, one of the Atari co-founders, Nolan Bushnell, said, "Hey, let's zhuzh up your average pizza place. You know what I mean? Let's make it not just a pizza, not just a caricature of an Italian chef on the boxes. Let's get some robots in there. And then, you know, we can't really put boundaries on art, right? So these robots are real characters. One of them, who might not have aged well, is a rat who has a Jersey accent for some reason and is chain smoking."
Yeah, like giant cigars. He's like clearly mob connected. Yes. And I do just want to add, we don't have to jump back to this, but this is 77. Country Bear Jamboree was debuted in Florida, in Orlando, in 1971 at the Magic Kingdom.
There's a great documentary about this.
Mm-hmm. And again, like in the Rockafire explosion documentary that I think you're referencing, they don't really exactly cop to ripping that off, but it's eerily similar.
It's like,
if anyone, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, man. It's kind of like that Behind the Music interview with Vanilla Ice about the beat for Under Pressure.
Yeah. So Nolan Bushnell grew up in Utah. He said he had an engineering degree. He had a background in kind of, you know, in amusement parks and kind of like carnival type atmospheres. He learned that there was a business side to these types of shows and these types of traveling, you know, scenarios. And he started to pay really close attention to consumers and the kinds of things that they liked and their patterns and their habits, right? Sort of the way, you know, you think about the way like a grocery store is organized in order to kind of capitalize on people's, you know, what attracts them and like to put things in a certain order so that they get the maximum yield out of your customer. I mean, it, you know, it's just part of it. It's all about making money. And that's what he was doing. He graduated the University of Utah, and then he moved to California, and he wanted to be an engineer for, ding, 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 Disney. And they don't call them engineers there, do they? They call them Imagineers.
They do. And this was already, he's an early adopter of this kind of stuff, and it's a dream job, right? Obviously, and in many ways, it's still a dream job today. A good friend of ours, friends of the show, Andrew Howard, who you might recognize from our sister podcast, Saver, he has Imagineers in his family.
So cool.
Right? So so let's go to Ted Dabney. Ted Dabney is a friend of Nolan Bushnell's, and together they co-found Atari. And Ted is always very, very forthright about this. He says the idea that became Pizza Time was Nolan Bushnell's dream. It was the beginning of everything. He didn't even think about a video game until later. Apparently, according to Ted, his pal Nolan would take them around to different restaurants and they would go look at the restaurants and they would say like, okay, what's working here? How can we get robots involved? Exactly. You know, how can we make this how can we make this Disneyland at home?
I love that this was truly the dream. And then kind of, you know, the video game industry, they kind of invented by accident. I mean, not wasn't by accident, right, but you know, right. it put that whole pizza dream on the back burner because Dabney and Bushnell started working on something called Computer Space, the world's very first commercial arcade machine in 1970. He never quite let the pizza dream die. You know, he sort of like had it in reserve, but they went on in 1972 to found a little company you might have heard of called Atari and created a little game you might have heard of that seems really crazily dated now, but at the time was absolutely just, you know, a craze. Pong. Boop, boop, boop. You know, the one, mm-hmm. the two paddles on each side. And like, you know, you could play against somebody in the same room. Well, I guess everything was in the same room at the time because there was no online gaming yet. By the way, all of this stuff makes me think of an incredible show that I've been sleeping on for years. It was recommended to me called Halt and Catch Fire, that is about sort of the PC like race of the 1970s and 80s. And all of this kind of Atari stuff and all of this sort of like nascent computer tech that, again, by today's standards, when you look at the product, seems so dated. It shows you kind of the behind the scenes of how scrappy all these folks were and how forward thinking. Highly recommend Halt and Catch Fire. And it has an amazing, like, post-punk kind of soundtrack.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good or fantastic documentary work about the early days of video games. I used to write a series many years ago now called Stuff of Genius, which I mentioned before. Yeah. And we talk about Bushnell. We also talk about the success of early Atari and Pong. It's pretty crazy, right? Because you never know what the lightning in the bottle will be. That's why for almost every story of an inventor or a great luminary, you will see that they had a cavalcade of other stuff that they were interested in. You know what I mean? Like, Newton's really into alchemy.
He was hoping it'd be pizza, but it just so happened that it was video games. So pizza had to kind of take a back seat, right?
Right. But Dave and Buster's figured out. Yes. Just so. Dave and Buster's picked up the mantle there, I would argue, right?
Well, I don't know exactly. We're not here to talk about the history of David, but we'll leave that for another day. Again, Pong, massive, credited as being the first, like, commercial, huge blockbuster right. success. And when you go back and look at it now, or any of the games from that era, it's like, what is that? And the thing about Pong, though, was that it was fast. Like, the feedback, you know, of moving those paddles, like, it felt fair. Mm-hmm. There was a certain amount of skill that was involved. Unlike games like E.T., most of which ended up in a landfill. That's also a story mm-hmm. for another day.
That's a true story.
It is a very true story. But the industry that essentially Bushnell and Dabney founded is today worth, you know, close to $100 billion and just more advanced than any of these folks at the time mm-hmm. ever could have dreamed of.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now. tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Yeah, and they said, look, the profits at Atari are magnificent. We're doing gangbusters. We're doing busters numbers here, and there's not really a way for us to stay competitive because so many other forces are entering this market and innovating in their own way. So eventually, Nolan sells Atari to Warner Communications in 1976 for $28 million. And what do you say, guys? Should we do an inflation calculation there?
Can we have a boop?
And a boop.
And a boop. Mm-hmm.
And a beepity boop. What do we got? What do we got? What do we got? And we're talking $28 million in 1976 dollars. Today would be a whopping a boop.
And a boop.
Oh, we have to skip it. It won't let us do 10. Oh, yeah. Okay, here's how we'll do it.
And a boop.
Yeah, I don't know how much of this we want to leave in. Spoiler alert, folks, we're not great at math.
Yeah, apparently neither is the internet.
So this is so much money that, hang on. Dip, dip, dip. Okay. Oh, wow. Just this alone is making this a two-part episode. Okay, this is so much money that we had to go to our trusty inflation calculator and put it in a couple of different blocks. So $28 million, 1976, like you said, Noel, today that is $151,502,158.28.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
What we're saying is he didn't need the money.
No, he didn't. Right. He didn't need the money, obviously. But you know what? A lot of times these types of creators, the true creators, they're not the business guys. And again, you'll see that if you watch Halt and Catch Fire. They really do a good job of showing those types and like the true creative innovators versus like the ones that are just in it to turn a profit. So, yeah, he also, though, did, in order to get that payout, have to sign a 5-year non-compete agreement, which is the killer of creatives. Right. If you can't compete in that space anymore, he did remain on as head of Atari. But because of now being part of this giant corporate structure, he wasn't able to innovate like he used to be able to. That's another price of you know, I wouldn't call this. Selling out is such a loaded term, but that is one of the prices of you know, selling your company is you, unless you have it very specifically outlined in the terms, you know, you're going to have a new corporate overlord. But there was one project that he got the green light on, and it involved
pizza.
It's the
restaurant.
Yeah.
It's the restaurant. Of all his ideas, the suits are saying, like of all his ideas, the suits are saying, go back, Nolan. Go back to that restaurant thing. You had my attention, and now you have my interest, you know.
Only at this stage, it was called Coyote Pizza. And I guess he talks about an amusing anecdote of kind of selling the store, you know, selling the branding behind it. He ordered what he thought was a full-size coyote costume. And instead of a coyote, they screwed up or he maybe identified it in the catalog. It was a giant gray rat.
Rick Rat
costume, yeah, became very popular around the Atari HQ.
So there, you might have clocked that at the beginning of the show, folks, where we said that there was this mascot that was a chain smoking rat with a Jersey accent. That was their Bob Ross happy accident of Coyote Pizza. And they said, okay, for a while, Rick Rat was so popular around the office that he became the unofficial mascot for Atari, basically.
I mean, you know, they're similar enough. They're both scavengers, you know. They're both have kind of matted fur and eat carrion and smoke cigars and wear bowler hats, you know. What you can do with a coyote, you can also do with a rat. So the suits at now Atari Corporate are like, go with God. And they essentially, they gave him, didn't they give him someone to help him out? The Gene Landrum, I believe his name.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, here's their idea. And we've got quotes from Gene on this. So Coyote Pizza's taken off. People love Rick Rat. And Gene says, I did the complete business plan for the rollout of the Atari 2600. It was going to take him another year to get it designed and put it into motion. And Nolan said, hey, Gene, you got all this time. Go do a business plan just like you did before. I loved it. But go do it for this family entertainment concept. And then Gene takes to it like a fish to water or a rat to smoking cigars, apparently. He says he comes up with all the ideas. And, you know, and Nolan, one thing that's really stand up about Nolan Bushnell is that he gives credit where it's due. And he says, in a real way to him, Gene is the founder of Chuck E. Cheese because Gene took this idea and made it reality, like renting the facility, hiring people, getting recipes, everything, right? Gene was on the ground floor for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it really was a concept that outside of, like, you know, the Country Bears Jamboree, which isn't a restaurant experience, it's just, you know, old honky-tonk kind of show, wasn't really out there. So that, you know, this was in the same way that Atari was really the first, you know, home console to market. It didn't ultimately end up being the one that was the most impactful. That would have been the NES, you know, that came a little later, because the 2600 that we were talking about too was plagued with all kinds of problems where they like ported over things like Pac-Man and made all these investments in, you know, high level intellectual property like E.T., but the ports didn't look very good. And then some of those bets on intellectual property really failed. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, E.T. was such a poor seller that ended up in a landfill. But this whole restaurant concept thing really seemed to have legs. So they do a little bit of shuffling around. Landrum is kind of, he's a bit not in charge, but he definitely has a say. And Landrum is developing this idea. Rick Rat's pizza starts to transform. Rick Rat's got to go, he says. Nolan, we're making this a kid's place. We can't have a rat. It's too predatory and too lethal. Now, that's interesting, because we know kind of where things landed eventually with Charles Entertainment Cheese.
Yeah, so they had to compromise. Just like William Faulkner said, kill your darlings, you know? Yes. You have to make tough decisions when it comes to effective creativity. And I'm sure they quoted Faulkner a lot in the early days of Chuck E. Cheese, for sure. So originally what they did is they tried to find something that was less maybe predatory or lethal, because Gene was concerned a rat would be kind of scary. So Rick Rat became Big Cheese.
Doesn't that sound gangsterish at all?
Yeah, right. It sounds like he got a promotion in the mob.
100%. He's the Big Cheese now.
Yeah, but he this was before the age of widespread internet, right? So they couldn't just Google the name, and it took them a second to learn that the name had already been taken. Some other company had trademarked Big Cheese. So they went to the next best thing, Chuck E. Cheese, which Nolan called a three-smile name.
That's really cute. And as we mentioned before, just like coincidentally with Max's mysterious E middle name, the E stood for entertainment. But an important part, again, they don't speak about, you know, we know how litigious the mouse is. So you don't see a lot of people saying, you know, oh yeah, that's definitely where we got our, what we were trying to do. But Chuck E. Cheese, does that ring a bell? Mick E. Mouse? Chuck E. Cheese? I mean, you know, I guess when you steal from the best. We are going to get into a bit of how some of these things were lifted from the Imagineers in just a second.
Yeah, yeah, because there's definitely a Vanilla Ice, you know, Queen situation going on here. So Landrum, despite his initial reservations, he actually was in the boardroom when after he had made this first pitch, everybody went nuts. They loved it. And he said, I wouldn't hire me. Gene said, I wouldn't hire me. I'm an electronics guy. But he got really into this and he started thinking about it very seriously. And he said, look, we want a family-friendly atmosphere. We don't want any of those rowdy hooligans that you see at other pizza places. So our solution is that all minors will have to be accompanied by adults. And this is something that occurs today, right? Like it also, if you think about it, and they don't say this, but if you think about it, it's a great way to make sure that every table has more customers.
Yeah, not to mention that they also sell beer to this day that's, you know, for the adults. And my kid is not of Chuck E. Cheese birthday party age anymore, but when she was a little younger, I remember taking her to one, and I'd obviously not been as a parent ever before. And they do a thing, I don't know if they've always done this, where they give you an invisible ink stamp on the back of your hand and on the back of your kid's hand, and they have to match so that when you leave, they shine a light on it and see if they match to make sure that no one's snatched somebody else's kid.
Which, I mean, it's a good safety measure, too.
I agree.
You know, also, here's the thing. Why would you have your kid's birthday here? Well, you would have it there because technology comes together in a very cool way that is also a little bit cheaper than Disney, just being brass tacks here. If you go to this pizza place, then you are guaranteed to see animatronic, like live cartoon characters that sing songs, and they do comedy bits like vaudeville style every 8 minutes on the dot as you and your family and your kids' friends eat your pizza. The pizza is just sort of a smaller part of the experience or part of the gestalt here. People aren't going because they're rave Michelin star reviews of the pizza.
And I'm bummed that when I was at Disney World, I didn't get a chance to go to another one of the inspirations for this outside of pizza, which was the Enchanted Tiki Room. Yeah. And also, by the way, if anyone's interested in Disney history and the history of the Imagineers, there's a museum that's not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. It's called the Walt Disney Family Museum. And it's in the Presidio in San Francisco. And they have a lot of the prototypes for those things and a lot of like the technology that like Iwerks invented, you know, who was one of the original kind of right-hand tech people at Disney, like the optical printer and the multi-plane camera and all of that stuff. And they have like some of the, you know, the animatronic prototypes for what would end up being the Tiki Room and the Country Bear Jamboree. But yeah, surprise, surprise, the Country Bear Jamboree did predate all of this pizza time business. So, and as we know, Bushnell originally wanted to go to work as an Imagineer at Disney. So it makes sense. I would say probably goes a bit beyond inspiration and a little more straight out theft. I don't know. But I haven't heard anything about any lawsuits because we know that Disney is very litigious and nothing in our research pointed to any serious, you know, legal cases between the two companies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point. It's a good point. Maybe they gave them a pass because if you think about it, the existence of a Chuck E. Cheese at this point in time is also helpful for Disney. Right.
It's true.
So it makes them look good as well. There may have been a calculation there. Also, I got to just say, you know, plagiarism aside, whether or not we want to consider this stealing, and it does cleave pretty closely to Disney, just for the record, if you put all that to one side, the technology behind it is so impressive.
Unbelievable.
They automated these with reel-to-reel tape. That's how they like programmed them. That's nuts.
I mean, and let's, anybody that's, you know, even a sort of audio nerd out there understands that, like, you know, with computers, you have so much precision as to like when audio, you know, connects or synchronizes with picture and stuff like that. But reel-to-reel tape is literally magnetic tape. You can automate a start and stop of something like that, but it has to all be a program that runs in sync with these other devices, that, you know, the movement of the animatronics and stuff, and then it just stops and it's all kind of synced up together. It's another thing that at the Family Museum, you can really see how they did sound sync in the early days of, like, you know, Fantasia, for example, where every little audio cue syncs up with a visual, you know, on the dime. And it's so difficult to do. We take it for granted, you know, how analog and hands-on and really just required so much thought, you know, to do all that stuff. So you're right. Even this kind of poor man's version of that, still quite impressive.
Oh, very much so. And also, if you want to get a sense of how impressive it is, just go over to YouTube and watch these lovely characters when something goes wrong. It's terrifying, and it's worth your time if you're like, I don't have enough nightmares on a daily basis.
And it left a mark pop culturally in that respect too, because of things like Five Nights at Freddy's, you know, where you have these like animatronic things jump scaring you, you know, and all of that. Because it is nightmare fuel when the skins are off.
Yeah. And so with that, let's give some shout outs, some credit where it's due to the other people associated with the design of Chuck E. Cheese and other characters. Bob Flemates, and then engineers like Larry Emmons and Rob Milner. These are all Atari guys. And then Harold Goldbranson is the one who said, let's put some skin on these. Let's make them not look like Westworld minus Mask. So Harold Goldbranson is the reason they look cute rather than sinister.
Yeah, if you watch that Rock of Fire Explosion documentary, there is a really good point that I think it's Bushnell, I can't remember, one of the main players points out, is that, you know, this is a combination of many disciplines. It requires computer programming, it requires engineering by building the skeletons, and it requires things like special effects makeup experience, you know, to make these stretched kind of, you know, poseable, articulatable faces. And so it was all kind of coming together in this final presentation that really combined all of these completely, you know, different backgrounds.
100%. And this is where we shout out the reel-to-reel tape wizard, Mike Hatcher, who programmed a lot of these movements.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. So all these folks kind of Voltron up, they assemble their Avengers. As a result, the first Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time Theater opens May 17th, 1977, San Jose. And this was an old brokerage building. It was pretty big, 5,000 square feet. They had an indoor arcade. Of course, the marquee event, the big tent here, is the animatronic show. And Noel, people really liked it, and they started adding different guest characters too, right?
Yeah, and again, sorry to keep harping on this, but like the same with the Country Bears Jamboree. They have several different stages and different kind of guest performers pop in. Also just wanted to point out that originally, I think it was just like animated torsos. They didn't even have like bottom halves, and they just appeared in these kind of fake picture frames on
like
the wall.
Like a Zoom call, yeah.
Just like that. But no, you're right. They definitely started to bring in other characters like Dolly Dimples, who's a piano playing hippo, and the Fantasy Forest Game Preserve, which I guess that's her band. And that was named after Gold Branson had a company called Fantasy Forest. So he named it after that. And then we also had, they made some changes. There was a group of, you know, backup singers called the Warblets, and they changed them to the Mopsy Sisters. And then they had a character called Krusty the Cat, which isn't particularly appealing. And they switched that one out for a little purple fella named Mr. Munch.
Yeah, they had a lot of folks in there. It's kind of like how McDonald's had its pantheon, you know, in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, yeah. The Grimace, which Max pointed out to us, is apparently meant to represent a giant taste bud. Is that true, Max?
Yeah. According to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So, you know,
yeah,
it could be just comedy, but that's what they said on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's one giant taste bud.
Oh, Max, forgot to tell you, this is totally off the rails here, too. But we're huge fans of public radio, and Noel and I got to meet and hang out with Ophira Eisenberg from Ask Me Another. You may know her as Her Ripe Begonias if you listen to the show. So we might actually be able to talk a genuine radio expert onto the show, maybe, right? I guess we got to do a good job with this episode.
We'll do our best.
Yes. We'll see.
We'll do our best to do our duty to God and our country. And Charles Entertainment Cheese. Atari was kind of getting fed up with the whole restaurant idea. It was no longer particularly aligned with their goals because they had, after all, bought a video game company, right?
Right. 100%. And they like the so the thing is, you can do these fun experimental projects when times are good, but when times get a little bit leaner, the fun stuff goes out the window and you got to focus on your core mission. And Atari's having a hard time getting into the home video market and really establishing a good stake. So their parent company, Warner, sells the restaurant and concept to Nolan Bushnell. They sell him his own dream back to him in 1978 for $500,000. Bushnell doesn't waste any time. He doesn't give up. He incorporates the business. It's going to be Pizza Time Theater Incorporated. We're going to open more of them. I'm going to appoint myself chairman. And Gene, I need you on this. Forget Atari. Forget the suits. We're Rick Rat people through and through.
Yeah. And they really start to try to, you know, launch a seriously intense marketing campaign. They need franchisees, you know, they need swag, they need to get people aligned with this brand. And they had like a PR firm that they were working with called Easley Public Relations. And they were making some kind of outlandish claims that also seemed to me that might have attracted some legal proceedings. But we didn't read much about that or anything. But they claimed that the Pizza Time Theater had the only computer-controlled 3D animation outside Disneyland. A bold claim.
Yeah, it's bold because what's interesting about it is that it's not true, right? That's the interesting part, that it's very much on purpose wrong. I don't know if we can lay this at the feet of Nolan and Gene, because they cracked a deal with you're right. They did. They were the ones who propagated some of the embellished marketing, but they also were successful.
Yeah.
They got the interest of a guy named Robert L. Brock. Yeah, Bob to his friends.
Bob Brock to his friends. Yeah, Bob Brock.
Yeah, and Bob Brock is the president of Tim.
Yeah, that's Tim, the one you're thinking of. No, not that Tim. That's the Topeka Inn management. Topeka Inn, and his old. I'm sorry, not to rag on the guy, but his claim to fame was he was incredibly rich because he owned the largest franchise of Holiday Inn hotels, the most innocuous and boring of hotels in all of the world. But they've sure been around for a long time, and they did probably, as far as I know, originate the Continental Breakfast, but maybe not. That's just what I associate it with.
Well, every day is a holiday at the inn. You're welcome, Bob. Use that one.
Hotel, motel, Holiday Inn. These guys are trying to get into the tech sector now, to a degree. I think he understood restaurants, you know? I mean, after all, hotel, you know, management is part of the hospitality sector. So this is like, you know, it's a restaurant. I know what that is. The other stuff is just sort of extra, but also seems to be, you know, aligning with kind of cutting edge trends. So Brock invested in June of 1979. He signed a $200 million co-development deal with Bushnell, which gave Brock exclusive franchising rights to Pizza Time theaters in 16 states across the southern and midwestern United States. The contract also included some language around some goals, right?
Yeah, and this is where it gets a little bit tricky. So this is also a turning point. This is going to be a two-part episode, folks. The contract they sign with the president of Tim is going to... they're going to give them 285 stores. That's what they want to grow to. And of those 285, the majority, 200 stores, are going to be operated directly by Tim. The other 85 are going to be kind of sublet, sub-franchised out. And this turns out to be a bit of a Faustian bargain.
I can see that. And Ben, just so I'm getting the terms straight, would the completely owned and operated ones, would those be what you might consider like the flagship stores, and then the franchised ones are like maybe in smaller markets or something like that? Or I don't know. I'm trying to understand experientially what would be the difference. Or is it just a logistical thing? Like, why do it this way?
Yeah, well, we're going to have to find out in part two of many lives of Charles Entertainment Cheese.
What have I done? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to leave it with such a cliffhanger.
Oh, let's hang on the cliff together, because we'll be back this Thursday with the rest of the story. But in the meantime, too, we want to say thank you to everybody who's been tuning in while we are on the road. You might have noticed sometimes our mics sound a little weird. We've been recording in different hotel rooms. Thanks to Max for his patience. Noel, you and I have been playing Russian roulette, basically, with Wi-Fi connections. Yeah. I think you had a slow one last time. I got a slow one this time. But we're not going to let that stop us from telling Mr. Cheese's story.
Nah, we wouldn't. It's just too important. It's just too damn important. You know, you owe it to yourself to have a full understanding of the cultural experience that is the United States. And Charles Entertainment Cheese is going to get you there. And seriously, you might think you've heard the best bits. I assure you, there is much more to come. So thanks to our research associate extraordinaire, Dr. Z, for this one, and more to come from this incredible story in the next episode. Who else we got to thank? There's others.
Oh, so many. Chuck E. Cheese. Let's thank also, of course, our pal, Mr. Matt Frederick, who is hanging out with us here as we were on the road. Let's thank Yves Jeffu, Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit. And then, of course, our own field correspondent, let's call him, Alex Williams, who composed this track.
He sure did. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.